Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, last week's massive immigration raid at a South Georgia Hyundai plant could affect relations with United States ally South Korea. Bird flu has once again been detected in Georgia. And as Hurricane Preparedness Week begins at GPB, an expert explains how to get the latest info on weather threats.
If people have weather apps tied in with like local media, they'll get a lot of information that way. A lot of people have their own apps that they can monitor that information.
Today is Monday, September 8th. I'm Sophie Gratis, and this is Georgia Today. South Korea's foreign minister is en route to the U.S. to finalize steps for the return home of several hundred workers detained in a massive immigration raid in southeast Georgia last week. The arrests at a Hyundai battery plant have caused confusion, shock, and a sense of betrayal among many people in South Korea. Rafael Rashid, a freelance journalist in Seoul, told NPR's Here and Now the images of South Koreans in shackles, in particular, aren't going down well in the country, which is a key U.S. ally.
Social media is flooded with comments about feeling backstabbed and humiliated. And I think there's genuine shock that this comes just, I think it's about 10 days after President Lee Jae-myung had his meeting at the White House with Trump. People are basically asking, you know, we promised hundreds of billions of dollars in investments, so why are our workers being treated like criminals?
Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says the operation by DHS won't deter U.S. investment. South Korea has become a key partner in Georgia's economic development, but Georgia leaders have remained largely silent on the raid. South Korea plans to bring the workers being held at a detention center in Folkston, Georgia, back to the country on a charter flight. Meanwhile, the Office of the Consulate General of Mexico in Atlanta says out of the 475 workers detained, 23 were Mexican nationals. On Friday, Georgia's Department of Agriculture confirmed a positive case of highly pathogenic avian influenza, also known as bird flu, in a backyard flock in Metro Atlanta's Henry County. It marks the first confirmed case of HPAI since January, when another backyard flock and two commercial flocks in North Georgia were culled after testing positive. There's no cure for bird flu once a flock contracts it, and it is highly contagious. Georgia Department of Agriculture spokesman Matthew Agbent says it's important to call for testing if you suspect your birds are sick.
Much rather you call us out, we come out and have a negative test. Timing is really of the essence when it comes to responding to HPAI outbreaks.
The department's recommended biosecurity measures can be found at agr.georgia.gov. The Georgia Forestry Association is calling three recent mill closures a crisis, sending shockwaves through every corner of one of the state's major industries. The group on Friday said the closures of a containerboard mill in Cedar Springs and of pulp and paper mills in Savannah and Riceboro amount to an estimated $3 billion loss in economic output. It says more than 100 logging crews are at risk of shutting down and that wood chips are piling up with no buyers, cutting off vital revenue for sawmills. Local taxing authorities expect millions of dollars in lost revenue. The association's president and CEO, Tim Larimore, said in a video posted publicly that his group is working with Governor Brian Kemp and others to identify immediate and long-term solutions to strengthen the industry. Georgia Pacific closed its facility in Cedar Springs in southwest Georgia in July. International Paper said in August that its two facilities in southeast Georgia would close by the end of this month. Many healthcare providers have knowledge gaps when it comes to perimenopause or the time leading up to menopause. That's why Peri Academy is offering health professionals training from experts across medical specialties on how to assess and treat symptoms. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
The Academy offers accredited continuing education on topics related to perimenopause, including metabolism, sleep, and overall health. Laura Okafor is the founder of Peri Academy. She says women's symptoms often are misunderstood.
There are just a lot of still question marks and confusion around prescribing. So that would be number one. The second one would be around mental and emotional health, which is still one of the most misunderstood chapters in perimenopause.
Understanding symptoms like anxiety, brain fog, and night sweats in the context of perimenopause during a patient evaluation, that's the goal of the certification. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
The Georgia Department of Education's move to place full-time literary coaches in 60 of the state's high-need elementary schools seems to have resulted in some improvement among young readers in Macon-Bibb County and elsewhere. That's according to a review of the results of a 2025 statewide assessment. Most Bibb County schools that received instructional literary coaches saw improved student reading scores this year. According to the review of the assessment by Macon-Bibb County Schools, improvement in English language arts and reading statuses for third graders is more pronounced at some of the elementary schools that have literary coaches. This is the second year of the state's literary coaching initiative. The American Association of University Professors Georgia chapter released a survey showing that many professors in Georgia are unsatisfied with their jobs. GPB's Sarah Callis reports on their findings.
The results showed that more than half of the 800 professors surveyed would not recommend working in Georgia to a colleague. President of AAUP Georgia chapter Matthew Bodie has conducted the survey for 3 years. He says many respondents cited political climate and other issues among top reasons for dissatisfaction.
But over the last 3 years, we've really seen a significant segment of the population and faculty express concerns about their salary, about their job, about their working conditions.
Around 90% of those surveyed work at public colleges and universities. The University System of Georgia Board of Regents did not immediately reply to a request to comment on the survey results. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis.
This week is Hurricane Preparedness Week here at GPB. NOAA forecasters are projecting above-average hurricane activity as we enter the second half of hurricane season. That means it's a good time to talk about how we can all be ready when severe weather strikes. GPB's Pamela Kirkland spoke with meteorologist David Nadler about how Georgia prepares for tropical threats, even far from the coast. Nadler is a member of the Storm Ready Advisory Board and the Warning Coordination Meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Here's their conversation.
Your office at the National Weather Service is focused on forecasting. How do you decide which storms you're going to follow closely versus other areas of interest?
Well, our office covers, you know, specifically north and central Georgia, 96 out of the 159 counties. We don't have any coastal areas. We'll cover more of the counties that are closer to the coast. So that said, I mean, any potential threats or impacts to the state, we'll certainly start, ramping up our level of awareness and messaging, forecasting, you know, to our partners, which, you know, emergency managers, public safety officials, all the decision makers across those 96 counties. And then, of course, it trickles to the public as well. The National Hurricane Center, which is a national center in Miami, they're primarily doing the forecast on the tropical systems, any tropical system. So we take a lot of their, you know, we work closely with them and take a lot of their information, just relay it to more of a state or local level perspective for impacts to the public.
And to that point, as far as monitoring the coast versus kind of the inner part of Georgia, Hurricane Helene was one storm last year that we saw that came up through middle central Georgia. So as far as coordinating with the National Hurricane Center, I'm sure National Weather Service was also very active in getting those alerts out, too, to say, hey, there's a hurricane coming, but it's not coming the usual way that you would think.
Yeah, Helene was very unique in the sense of how powerful it was, but also how fast it was moving. Came up, you know, and it made landfall near the panhandle of Florida, but it was so intense and it was moving so quickly that it was able to maintain significant strength even well inland, which caused a lot of the wind damage, you know, really pretty broad swath of, you know, significant damage due to the winds on top of the heavy rainfall that we had, and even tornadoes on the east side of the center of the storm that affected parts of like eastern Georgia and then on into South Carolina as well. So Yeah, we were lockstep with the Hurricane Center and really trying to emphasize the potential significance of that event and the potential damage that it was going to do ahead of time.
And you touched on this a little bit earlier, but how does the National Weather Service go about getting this information out? What's the best place for people to look for some of these alerts coming from you all?
Well, you know, our media partners are very important, such as yourselves and on television and getting this information out, because the information that the National Hurricane Center releases every 3 to 6 hours for a particular event like Helene, for instance, or any tropical system, it's public information. So once they put out their forecast, it's viral, you know, it goes out everywhere. So, you know, if people have apps, you know, weather apps, tied in with like local media, they'll get a lot of information that way. A lot of people have their own like hurricane tracking, you know, apps that they can monitor that information. But just go into, you know, making sure you're kind of tied in some way with the specific county that you might live in, because they'll be pushing out a lot of the same information that we're sharing, is a good way, or just going straight to our local National Weather Service webpage to get that information as well. So there's a variety of sources, but they all should be pretty much putting out the same information with respect to tropical systems.
Yeah, probably a situation where it's better to have more information than less information.
Right.
As a meteorologist, how do you predict things about storms, like direction, intensity, tracking where is going to be most impacted?
Well, there's a couple of things there. I mean, we use real-time observations from, I'm sure you might be familiar with like the Hurricane Hunters, or when Air Force and NOAA send in these special airplanes to measure. You know, the data actually within the system to get a feel for its, you know, how strong it might be, or if it's strengthening or weakening. That's a big thing, just the real-time observations. The other thing would be just satellite data. Of course, we can see, you know, we have this incredible satellite network of satellites that we can tap into and see how the system might be strengthening or weakening, expanding. Where it's moving, of course, you know, direction, of course, like, you know, that's very important, how fast it's moving. Just a combination of the remote sensing tools that we have with satellite and radar. If it's close to a radar, like San Juan, Puerto Rico has a radar, so sometimes we could see what it looks like offshore. and then, of course, the actual data from the hurricane aircraft, or the hurricane hunters that actually fly through the systems several times a day.
Lastly, earlier this year, the National Weather Service lost hundreds of employees to federal cuts, though there is talk of rehiring. Have you felt any impact on your office's ability to track storms? And just bottom line, can people still rely on the National Weather Service during this busy season?
Yeah, 100%. We've had no notable impacts on our staffing that would affect our operational support. We're actually, the Weather Service is in the process of hiring almost 10% of its workforce in the next, you know, 6 months or so. Those jobs are getting out there right now as we speak. They're just kind of staggered a little bit. So, yeah, but we're working well and operating well. We have a great core, and we've always been down like maybe one or two or three people here or there throughout the years. So it's not, we're not unaccustomed to, you know, being down a few people. It does not affect our day-to-day operations. And even when we have higher impact weather and we staff up, you know, we know, we have people that work, are used to working, you know, round the clock and staggering shifts and stuff like that, to meet the needs. So, yeah, we just keep doing that, and there's been no issues here at all.
Keep doing what you're doing. We check you guys often to see what we need to be keeping an eye on.
Thank you.
David Nadler, warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service and a member of the Storm Ready Advisory Board. As part of Hurricane Preparedness Week, you can find more resources and tips on our website over at gpb.org.
Don't forget to tune in to our morning and afternoon shows this week for more on hurricane preparedness and how major storms impact Georgia. That's it for today's edition of Georgia Today. Thanks for listening. If you would like to learn more about these stories, you can visit gpb.org/news. And if you haven't yet subscribed to this podcast, you can take a moment right now and keep us current in your podcast feed. If you have feedback, we would love to hear it. You can email us at georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Sophie Gratus, and we'll see you tomorrow.